Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Third and final hour of Parental Guidance, starring Pete Meadors, Grant Paulson. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. PG-13, I think we went with at one point. Now we've just gone with Parental Guidance. Whatever you want to call this sucker, it's on the table. It's yours to do it. No problem. We're with you for 57 more minutes until noon. That's when Danny and Cakes come by to finish this off. What are you eating over there, Pete?
That would be Planters honey roasted, or honey roasted dry roasted peanuts.
Oh, peanuts.
Fabulous product. Just delicious. Speaking of delicious, by the way, go bug Chad Dukes today at Commonwealth Dry Goods. Buy a cheer wine. Tell him Grant and Pete told you to come by. I love cheer wine, by the way. I wish I lived closer to Commonwealth Dry Goods so I could go buy more of it. Because the one time I went over there, his wife was incredibly appreciative of me coming by. I was doing a game at George Mason, so I stopped in and bought me a cheer wine. Love that stuff.
What's
by the way,
wine
hey, Grant,
like?
By the way, 25 to go in the truck race. Guess what? Another crash.
You've been saying there are a lot of those.
It's been a crash-marred race today. Here, guys, please do me a favor. Stop crashing.
I don't think I could get interested in a truck race, I'll be honest with you. Where do they go, 90 miles an hour?
Well, no, they'll go probably within – the top speed, I think, it depends on the track. But, like, here at Pocono, they're probably going – they'd probably go 5 to 8 miles an hour less than the cup cars. I'd have to look into the top speeds and see just to be sure. But these dudes are like
they're going
cowboys,
like 185 miles an hour.
These guys are just cowboys. They're running into each other on pit road, and obviously these are the least experienced drivers in many cases in the series. That's why they start here in the ARCA and then the truck series and stuff like that. Ty Gibbs won the ARCA race at Pocono. Joe Gibbs Racing just continues to turn out incredible products. It's just amazing. Joe Gibbs touches things and they turn to gold. But I mean, this has been a race of epic, disaster at Pocono. Hopefully, our boy Brandon Brown coming up in the Xfinity race has a little bit better luck than some of these dudes here coming up at 12:30 at Pocono later on today.
So back to Cheerwine. What does Cheerwine taste like?
Cheerwine is like cherry Coke. It's like a cherry. It's a cherry flavored drink.
I probably have had it phenomenal. As a kid, but I don't think I've had it in years and years, and I have no file. Like, I can't think about what it tastes
red
like.
Red can, and it says Cheerwine on it. Probably at the time, Grant, when you were growing up in a beautiful King George, Virginia, it was probably popular in, like, the independent stores. You wouldn't find it in that great Sheets that they have just over 301 right there in King George County, but – you know,
maybe Dutch's Mart would have had
Burns Mart. Yes, exactly. Places like that would be the places you would find that and Yahoo at the time and all that stuff.
Awesome. Yoo-hoo. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, Yoo-hoo. You know, I don't know what it is about Yoo-hoo, and I am a chocolate connoisseur. If it's especially chocolate milk, I love chocolate milk. Maybe I'm pretty sure chocolate milk is my all-time favorite number one beverage. I love chocolate milk. But there's something different about Yoo-hoo's mix of the product that I don't necessarily feel like I'm getting the same chocolate that I get in like a Rutter's chocolate milk, a Hershey's chocolate milk. So I would have to really look into the ingredients on the back to see what the difference is. But it's definitely a different taste. But, you know, chocolate
Yoo-hoo's
milk.
Still around? I just Googled it. I didn't realize. I haven't seen a Yoo-hoo in years.
Oh, dude, it's readily available in most stores.
Really?
It's usually just one or two sleeves of it, though, in a cooler in a store. Most of your major ones, I mean, you're like, I see it in Wawa. I see it in 7-Eleven. You know, most of your places like that carry it. But you got to look, you know, chocolate milk in many cases and milk itself are in the most obscure portion. Like if you're, you know, in a Wawa, you go left to right. In the left-hand one, it's Coke, all the Coke products, then the Pepsi products. Then in between, you have like the waters, the Gatorades, and all the other fancy, you know, vegetable juices and all this other stuff. And then over here, kind of in the far right, almost by the back door, you know, kind of hidden from everybody. Hey, we're chocolate milk. We're over here. You know, come and get us. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only person that goes in the Wawa there to get chocolate milk. But, I mean, after every Navy game I broadcast, football or basketball, on the way home, it's usually a chocolate milk. It's either cookies and cream shake from Chick-fil-A, or if it's after 10 o'clock, it becomes a chocolate milk from Wawa on the way home. But it's almost
that
like chocolate milk is kind of over in the, you know, just over in the corner. Like, hey, we're over here. You know, come say hi to us. You know, we got good product
over here,
too.
I have not drank chocolate milk since when I was in, like, elementary school. And they give you those little cartons where you have to, like, pull the top apart in either direction. And then
sure.
You push in and pull back. And, like, a little triangle opens up
yes.
So you can drink out of it, and there's like paper torn at the top. It's all gross, getting wet every time you drink it. That is the last time I drank chocolate milk, and I probably won't again at any point.
Well, I mean, based on your dietary habits now, it doesn't surprise me that you would.
I hate milk. I eat like milk
dude.
In things, of course. You know, when I make scrambled eggs, and I make the best scrambled eggs, big, fluffy, wonderful sheets of egg. I put milk in it, or if I'm eating,
I put milk in my scrambled eggs.
You got to; it helps out. Like brownies or something like that. Obviously, milk in things is not a problem at all. It's just that I would never drink milk by itself. I mean, if I had to go chocolate or normal milk, I would go chocolate. Like if today you just said with your lunch you have to have milk, then I would probably do chocolate milk. But there's 1,000 things I'd rather have, including the very boring, very bland, very awful water that I'm not good at drinking.
That's
like
a great description of water, by the way. It's a great description.
I'm like Odell Beckham Jr., man. It's just I have a hard time drinking it. I always have a water. I'll buy bottles and have them on me, or I'll walk around. Every day before the show, I come down here with a big ice water. And by the end of the show, I've taken 4 sips. I'm bad at drinking it, but I always have it. But I'm a Coke over Pepsi guy. But the thing about my Coke habits would be this. So, first of all, I love Coca-Cola Classic. Love, love, love it. I'm addicted to it. You and I have talked about this. I mean, there is nothing harder for me to still, after giving up a lot of the stuff that was bad for me, to stop thinking about, stop craving, stop wanting more than Coke. I love Pepsi as well, if Pepsi's out of a fountain on ice. I like Pepsi out of the can a little bit less. Like a bottle of Pepsi is, I won't say does nothing for me, but it's fairly pedestrian. But like Coke over Pepsi, crush Coke all the time. But as far as other sodas, I'm very limited in what I would actually choose. Like out of a soda machine, I would do a Mountain Dew for sure. I love a can of Mountain Dew, which I think is actually a Pepsi product, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So that would be my second behind Coca-Cola Classic. Then probably diets. After Mountain Dew, I would say like Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi. But I don't think there are other soda products that I drink. Like I've never liked Cherry Coke at all, was never a Dr. Pepper guy. I got into a little bit of a Mr. Pibb kick in elementary school. Maybe that would be next, but, like, not a huge Mr. Pibb guy or Dr. Pepper guy. So, soda-wise, it's kind of Coke, Mountain Dew, maybe diets on ice. I don't really like them as much out of the can. Or bust. That's kind of where I'm at. And I don't like Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, for the record. I'll suffer through it. But I would take that over, like, a Dr. Pepper or Mr. Pibb or something like that.
Look, I mean, without question, my entire life, Coke has been the 1C. But quickly moving up to 1A now, is I've had a lot of success drinking Wave Soda here of late, our great sponsors, and the different flavors. And the great thing about it is Coke, 140 calories in a can, Wave Soda, 25. Terrific flavors. And
What's the sugar content like?
Very minimal. It's like 5 grams, whereas in Coke, it's like 43. So
you know, I've seen the cans, and I see the junkies talking about it, but the cans are all very bright. Is it like juice, or is
Yes, natural juice flavors. My favorite is apple. My daughter's favorite is mango. And that's the great thing about it is that's actually a beverage that I can give my daughter, and I don't have to worry about, you know, calorie count, high sugar count, and that kind of stuff. So that's the great thing about that. The flavors are ridiculous. I mean, you've got apple, tangerine, mango, cucumber, grapefruit, blackberry, blueberry, and you can order variety packs to try which ones you like, and then you can start to get the ones that, you know, the flavors that you like. I mean, my daughter and I like apple. She likes tangerine and mango. She even likes cucumber.
And this is a Junkies listener, right? Didn't I read that?
Yeah, Nat. Yep.
And is it in stores like Wegmans and stuff now, or is it just sold online, or what?
I'm pretty sure right now, for the most part, you got to do your business online. But, you know, it's really easy to do. Just go to wavesoda.com, and you can check out all the different flavors.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now. It says 85% sparkling water, 15% fruit juice.
Yep.
2 to 6 grams of sugar from the fruit juice, and 15 to 20 calories for the entire can, 15 to 25. So that's – man, that's interesting. So, but it's not soda then. It's more of a, like a juice – it's carbonated water
but
with juice.
It's got – see, and this is the best way to describe it, Graham. One of the reasons why I like Coke, and I've always drank Coke. Coke is like my coffee. I don't drink coffee, so I drank Coke for years. You know, Coke gives you a little bit of bite, you know, early in the morning. Gives
yeah,
you kind
a little
of a
cut
you know,
on that throat.
Well, the Wave Soda, in a similar way, meets that requirement. It doesn't have the same amount of grams of caffeine, but it's got enough that it gives you that bite and that sizzle you're looking for, and that's why I've stuck with the product. I've tried all this, you know, for years. I mean, obviously, you know, for my blood pressure and everything, it behooves me to, you know, look for, you know, healthier drinks and not drink Coke in the consumption of which I was doing it. I mean, there are days at work there where, you know, I'd have, you know, 2 to 4 Cokes between 5 a.m. and noon. And that's just, you know, it's just the way it was. I mean, it's all I've done. It's how I've always consumed it. But, you know, with my blood pressure being what it was, I mean, I've obviously had to start looking for some alternatives in terms of the amount of consumption of the Coke that I had, and looking for something else. And, I mean, you try these other waters and stuff like that, and flavored waters, and it's kind of like, blah, but it tastes like water. Well, this has just enough of that bite that grabs you a little bit, that, you know, meets the same kind of bite that Coke gives you. And that's why, for me at least, I've been able to continue on with the product and found some enjoyment with it. And obviously 25 calories better than 140, because like my doctor explained to me, and you know, the great Mike Reedman, he is unbelievable, trying to keep me together. He said, think about this: you drink 2-3 Cokes a day, that's like an extra meal by the time you add up all the calories and everything like that, just from the soda alone. So then you add the meal on top of it. Like, say you have a Coke in the morning, then you have a Coke or two Cokes with your lunch. Think of the calorie consumption that you're taking in just because there's 140 calories in every can of Coke.
Well, I care a lot less about the calories, to be honest, and more about all that sugar you're taking in.
Same thing. Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
But that's why,
it's like another Coke meal. And obviously, as you're mentioning, the sugar count is through the roof.
Yeah, the sugar for me is what kills me. It's that. You know, and the carbs that I try to really pay attention to more so than, like, just the strict calorie count. But it'll get you. But you got me thinking nostalgically now. You know, back in the day, like, my dad and I would be doing something. I'd help him either run something to the dump we'd have to drop off, or maybe we're doing something around town. And we're getting a couple things done. You feel good. You're in the car with your dad, and you come home. And after we would get something done, we worked up a good lather. We're outside in the heat in a summer day. We stop, and you get to choose what soda you want. And there was a time for me where that was like a root beer, like a bottle of root beer, and it was just the coolest thing in the world to drive down the street. You know, your dad's driving, you're in shotgun, you're both drinking a bottle of root beer. You feel like you're 30 years old drinking a bottle of beer. What was your nostalgic, like, I just did something with a family member, and I'm about to go grab a cold beverage from the gas station? What was the one you chose?
Oh, there's no question. Moreland's Country Store, beautiful Lothian, Maryland. Rock Creek Peach. Rock Creek Peach.
No file
soda
at all.
Oh, dude, the Rock Creek brand was fabulous. It, again, in a lot of independent country stores at the time. Bill's Country Store that we had over in Lothian, J.D. Bachman's, Moreland's, all those places. Rock Creek was a huge brand, and they're still Rock Creek is still in supply these days. They're like almost like the Crush sodas and stuff like that, where you could get grape and orange and some different flavors. But Rock Creek Peach, without question, was my off-brand go-to back in the day when we would ride our bikes up Sands Road to one of those great country stores on Route 408 in Lothian to get something to drink.
Dutch's Mart, baby. Route 206, slicing across King George County from Dahlgren to downtown. Pull over, hop in the Dutch's. Now it's called something else. I drove by there. Man, I feel so old because, like, nothing is the same in my hometown now. It's like the 10 to 2 Mart or some. I don't even know what it's called. But, yeah, Dutch's Mart. Get yourself a little Barg's root beer, bottle of root beer. He's Pete. I'm Grant. Let's get into the Nats next, the chances they'll have in this shortened season.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We know the Nats and the Yankees will open the season at Nationals Park playing one another. We don't know anything else about either team or any team's MLB schedule, but looks like July 23rd, 5 days shy of a month from now, at Nats Park, Yankees, Nats kick off the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Nats are your defending World Series champions, isn't that fun to say? The Yankees are the favorites to come out of the American League to win the World Series this year. But it got me thinking about some pressing Nats issues, so let's talk some ball for a few minutes. Let's start with this. Ryan Zimmerman said on Friday via a journal he's doing for the Associated Press that he's not sure if he's going to play or not. So I think our first Nats convo's got to be, how much different is this team without Zim? You'll miss his leadership in the clubhouse. You'll miss, you know, one of the veterans, obviously, that helps to stir the whole drink here. But they've got so many guys like Howie Kendrick and Adam Eaton, and now Eric Thames and Yan Gomes and Will Harris and Max Scherzer on the pitching staff, Anibal Sanchez. This is not a team that has to have one extra veteran in the clubhouse. So you worry, though, about that right-handed bat who can play some slick first base. You know, your other first base options, Howie Kendrick and Eric Thames, you know, aren't necessarily terrific defensively there. One less DH option. Remember that there's going to be a DH in the National League, Pete. So this could be a pretty big jolt to this club. Zim was great in the playoffs. A couple homers, drove in 7 runs. You know, when he's locked in, he still has really good at-bats and works counts. And when he gets really going, I mean, he can carry a team. So offensively, it could be a pretty substantial loss if Zim on this one-year contract decides he's not going to come back and play amid COVID-19 based on having a mom with MS and a couple of week-old.
Yeah, I mean, I think from this standpoint, as it pertains to Ryan, you know, you're talking about a guy that he's not one of these guys that's going to be a hanger-on. When he physically knows he's not going to be able to contribute at the highest professional level, Ryan strikes me as a guy that will walk away at that point. So you're going to miss, especially with the DH. I mean, it's a guy that's going to be able to give you a lot of at-bats. Probably has a lot of great matchup numbers against a lot of good pitchers that you would face, and you would miss that bat in those matchups, in those lineups, late inning shots against a reliever that he's had success with, a guy that's not going to panic. We've seen him come through so many times in the clutch. You miss his ability to come through in the clutch and not to be wowed by the moment late in a game. Those are the kind of things, and I think you do mention, I mean, you miss the steady force and the steadiness of Ryan Zimmerman if he is unable to, participate with the Nationals. And by the way, today's a big day. So today at 4, roster deadline for all 30 teams. They must submit their 60-man player pool to Major League Baseball that they're going to play with for the upcoming season. So today is a big day from that standpoint, so you want to keep an eye out for that coming up at 4 o'clock later on this afternoon. But, I mean, look, you know, there's no question you miss a guy of Ryan's caliber if he's not in there, even if for just the baseball reasons that I just gave. And obviously defensively, the guy's still very, very good over at first base.
Yeah, I think he's the best defensive first baseman they've got. I don't know that there's any debate about that. You know, you look at his splits, though. He demolishes left-handed pitching. I had tweeted about this week. I was looking up a bunch of splits and trying to kind of put together some matchups and see what Davey's thinking in terms of who starts where. And this was before Zim had mentioned he might not actually play. And there's a chance, I guess, that this is all much ado about nothing and he decides that he's going to play anyway. But he's got to be in the lineup if he's on the Nationals roster against left-handed pitching. Last year, he hit .367 off southpaws, .213 off right-handers. That's a really big, really bad split in terms of righty versus righty being a bad matchup, righty against lefty being great. Now, I don't think that's gospel or you should base decisions for the next 2-3 years, if that's how long his career goes, off of just that. But for his career, he hits .311 off lefties, which is amazing. 43 points better than what he hits off righties, which is very respectable. He's been a pro hitter right on right as well. But this is a guy throughout his entire career who kills left-handed pitching. So on days when you're playing a left-hander, he should absolutely be on first base or he should absolutely be DHing. There's almost no excuse to spell him those days. You give him his days off against right-handed pitching, maybe some guys that over the years he's got worse numbers against. But if you don't have him, I think that's where you probably miss him the most. Before we move on from the Zim convo, one thing I want to bring up is, in his statement, which I'm sure you read, Pete, as an anchor here, having to talk about it on air all day on Friday, in his statement, he references that owners are not going to be flying around the country with the players. And he referenced that the owners are not going to be traveling and putting themselves on the line at risk like the players. It's hard to see that and not to think that some of how he's feeling is at least influenced by the ongoing fight owners had with players that really never ended. And that while maybe, yes, the reason he's not going to play is because he's got a baby at home or his mother has the condition that she's got with MS and he doesn't want to have to not see her, have his family not see her for months and months. Completely understandable. But just by mentioning it in the statement, I think he opens up the possibility of, clearly, he's not happy with how this negotiation went, owners versus players, and it seems like that, even if it's a tiny factor, it is part of maybe his frustration at getting back to playing ball now.
No, I don't. I think, you know, I mean, as you look at it on the surface, you'd be a fool not to think that that probably has a smidge of an influence, without question, on this for not just him, but probably for a lot of guys. And, again, you know, it's the players that are making these sacrifices. It's the coaches, the manager, the training staff, the equipment guys. All of those guys are the ones that are making the sacrifice on behalf of the owners. And this is where we constantly get into this great debate. The owners obviously own the franchise. The players want to be, you know, major leaguers. And in this situation, you know, this is a tough deal for everybody involved, but at every time, you know, we see this, Grant, we see this, we talked about work stoppages earlier, you know, things of that nature. I mean, this is just the rub between players and ownership in every sport. We've constantly seen it. You know, I can understand why he would say that and bring that up to it, because it is ultimately, Grant, the players that will walk out on that field day after day into that clubhouse, regardless of how sanitized everything is, and they're the ones that are putting themselves at risk on a daily basis to make sure that there is a product. Because without the players, without the major league players, there's no chance these owners try to go forward with a bunch of single A and double A guys just to put a product out on the field. So it's ultimately these guys, you know, that we'll see on a daily basis, many of them veterans, that put the product forth that the baseball and the TV can have. They all work hand in hand as partners with each other. But ultimately, Grant, it comes down to whether those guys want to walk out on that field and play the game, period.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Pete. And, you know, what I hope is that fans don't vilify Zim if he chooses not to play or anybody else. And along those lines, anybody else. You know, do we know that he's alone here? Do we know that there won't be any other Nationals that don't report? I mean, one guy that I've kind of thought all along there was a possibility may not play is Sean Doolittle. I read somewhere, and I don't know if this is true or not, and this is something, you know, we'll find out more about, I'm sure, in due time if he doesn't play, but that maybe he's got a family member who's a little bit more at risk. But I just thought from the standpoint of how he was writing about and talking about this issue that he might have some long-term fears, you know, in terms of how this COVID-19, which he and so many other players in shape like he is probably get through without much of an issue right now. They don't really know decades from now what it's going to do to their body. And because this is a novel virus, I think that he might have some trepidation about the long-term effects. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that was one thought that I had just based on what we had seen him discuss via social media with fans. But are we sure that Zim will be the only guy? I mean, what if there are players all over baseball who are stars, multiple-time all-stars, like Ryan Zimmerman, who decide they're not going to play? And maybe it's partially COVID-19, and maybe they've still got a bad feeling in the pit of their stomach from the negotiation with the owners. I mean, maybe it's both. Who knows? But I think we have to at least prepare for that inevitability, that Zim's not going to be the only guy. It's just the first guy that we know because he happens to have this assignment where he's journaling throughout this pandemic and this baseball hiatus for the Associated Press. But what if there are other Nationals that don't show up? It's something I think we got to at least think about, Pete.
Grant, we've already seen it in the NBA with Avery Bradley. We've seen multiple WNBA players. We've seen an entire team in Orlando have to bow out because of COVID-19 for the NWSL.
Was that the women's soccer team,
yes,
right?
Congratulations to the Spirit, by the way, getting off to a good start in their portion of that tournament. And, you know, look, I mean, people are going to opt out. And let's face it, you can't hold it against them, Grant, because when they hold out, they're offering to forfeit their salary for this season. If they don't play, if they opt out, they don't get paid. So they are truly opting out because they have a strong conviction one way or the other here about not playing, whether it be for protecting an immediate family member, maybe an underlying condition that they have themselves that they haven't disclosed publicly out there. So if a player opts not to play, they are forfeiting their salary. So it's not like they're just sitting out and getting their money and saying, you know, up yours. I'm just going to sit out. They are forfeiting their money for 2020. So if they sit out, they're doing it without compensation. And I think that's, you know, something to keep in mind here. So I don't think you could hold it against them at all. If they were getting paid and they sat out, that would be one thing. But when you sit out, you're forfeiting your $2020. So I don't see how you could hold that against anybody in the least if they choose not to play in this short season escapade under the current pandemic conditions that we have in this country right now, where there's still over 33,000 active cases of COVID-19.
And certainly on the same level as not getting paid, maybe equally as important, or I don't know, in some cases, I would say even a bigger deal than that, because a lot of these guys have all the money they'll need for the rest of their lives probably. Not every player by any means, but some of the stars that might consider sitting out who have made 30, 40 million in a season recently or 20 plus million, what have you.
That's a few bucks.
That's a couple bucks. It's the minority of players in the league, but there's certainly guys who can relate. But you don't get a year closer to free agency. You don't accrue the season. So if you're got a guy that has 1 year left on your deal and then you get to be a free agent and go make more money and you sit out, you're not a free agent when you come back. You still owe that team a year. So I'm with you. I think that's something fans should consider as they kind of make up their mind on how they're going to view players making what is a really, really tough decision for themselves and presumably for their families. As far as the Nats roster goes, you can start to look around at some strengths, some weaknesses of this team. So, look, the pitching rotation is going to be outstanding, you'd have to imagine. 1-3 with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, the guys that pitched them through the playoffs last year. They stack up and I would say, compete in a trio against any other pitching staff in baseball. Anibal Sanchez is a year older now, so his offseason and then post-spring training being shut down, you know, this hiatus, you know, probably more critical. How hard was he working? What was he doing to stay in shape at 36 years old and a younger pitcher? But at his spot in the rotation at 36, I would say, number four spot, you kind of feel good about him after last year and the way he threw in some of those huge playoff games, almost threw a no-hitter in the NLCS in St. Louis in game two. Might have been game one, actually, as a matter of fact, against the Cardinals. And then Joe Ross is likely to be the fifth guy competing with Fetty, with Voth. But I think Ross will get that nod and will probably be the fifth starter. That rotation is as good as there is in the division and in the league. You'll take that. The bullpen, if Doolittle is there, I think has a chance to be really good. They brought in Will Harris. You still have Sean Doolittle. Rainey came into his own. Daniel Hudson was re-signed. If healthy, you saw what he can be as a big asset in the seventh, the eighth inning. Then you still have Suero and Roynes Elias and Javi Guerra vying for, you know, middle inning relief. So I'd say overall the pitching staff, again, is going to be a massive strength for this group, Pete. 60-game sprint, 162, doesn't matter. You know, when you have a big three in the rotation like they do, plus the depth now of the bullpen after spending money on Harris, keeping Doolittle, re-signing Hudson, they're in pretty good shape there.
Amazing season that Daniel Hudson had a year ago, considering how much abuse he got while pitching out of the bullpen in Toronto, even before he came to Washington. So you're hoping that that 1-2 punch of him and Do in the back end of the bullpen, obviously for however long he stays healthy, Elias at least gives them another left-handed arm, even though the numbers are kind of bass-ackwards with him down there in the bullpen. But, you know, look, I mean, you know, if Tanner Rainey gives us any glimpse of what he was last year, that's another flamethrower down there. Will Harris adds another veteran arm. He's not going to be wowed by the moment, gives him some stability. Suero obviously offers something there as that cutter continues to develop at a high level. And at least early in the season, you know, obviously one of Ross or Voth is not going to be needed in the rotation. So those are guys that at least early in this season, if a starter starts to run up a high pitch count in the fourth or fifth inning, you could use one of those guys as a potential bridge guy before you start, you know, nursing the back end of your bullpen as well. But also, you got to remember, Grant, with that DH now, you've almost got to manage now like an American League manager. You're not going to burn through pitchers because you don't have to pinch hit for them now. So whether you stay with a pitcher for an extra inning or two now, that decision is a lot easier because you don't have to worry about pinch hitting for that pitcher at any point. So I think it's going to be the gamesmanship of the game is definitely going to be different based on the fact that we're going to have the universal DH.
Big question, I would say. Yeah, you get into the DH and start to think about that lineup for the Nationals and how they'll put it together. So behind the plate, I'm fascinated to see what they do with Gomes and Suzuki in a sprint. You know, those guys obviously have certain pitchers that they'll catch. And that was a great catching tandem. But a lot of what they did was just to keep Kurt Suzuki healthy and fresh for the playoffs. So do you still have to manage that way, or can you tap into one over the other more often? Curious to see what Davey Martinez does there. But you know that those two guys will handle the duties. First base, you know, there is a plan with and without Zimmerman, but presumably, let's just say Zim plays, he and Eric Thames, who's a left-handed bat who doesn't hit lefties well, and Howie Kendrick will all get time at first. I think for the most part, it'll be a Zim-Thames kind of platoon, where Howie will get a day here or there at first, maybe a couple days a week there, a couple days a week as a DH, and a day a week or 2 days a week at second base and probably play, you know, 5-6 times a week. But with the DH, you know, one of those two guys is going to play first, and the other will probably DH. So Starlin Castro is your primary second baseman. And on a day against a left-hander, let's say Zim will play first and Howie Kendrick will DH. Against a right-hander, let's say Zim will play first and Howie will either DH or get the day off, and Eric Thames will DH, or perhaps it's Thames that plays first, and Howie, who's a better hitter off righties than Zim last year, DHs, and Zim gets spelled. So they could do it that way. Castro will play second with Kendrick spelling him. At third base, I think Asdrubal Cabrera, particularly early, will get most of the starts, but when Carter Kieboom proves that he's ready and capable, he could take over that job. And then you have Trey Turner as your everyday second base, a shortstop. And I don't think that Trey Turner will get more than a day or two off over 60 games, to be honest with you. But if that were to happen, then the second baseman, Starlin Castro, would slide over. Anything in the infield you think I got wrong or that you would amend there?
You know, I think the fascinating thing to watch is what happens at third base. You've got 22 days, basically, of spring training to get ready. But, I think the short season here bodes well for Carter Kieboom, because you can use these veterans like, you know, Drewby over at third for the most part if you want to, because it's a short season. So even though, you know Cabrera is a veteran at this point, you don't have to rush Carter Kieboom into that lineup and get big production from him, because you look at 60 games a lot different than you do 162. In my mind, and with the expanded roster of 30 guys here early at the start of the season instead of 25, you know, there's not as much pressure on Davey Martinez to get him up to speed, as opposed to, in this case, if you want to put Drewby over there at third, or if Kieboom shows you over the 22 days in preparation for the season, he's tearing the cover off the ball, he's handling himself better defensively over there, then maybe you do play Kieboom, and if he gets off to a tough start, then you got Cabrera and you can put him in. I think it's easier to start with Kieboom and go to Cabrera as opposed to if Drewby starts to struggle a little bit, then you look and go, all right, well, we got to put the kid in there. He has to play well for us now. So I think how they manage that situation over at third will be the key thing to watch here in the 22 days leading up to the season.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the outfield's a little bit more clear and easy. Soto's going to play left, Robles is going to play center, and Eaton will patrol right with Michael A. Taylor, you know, backing those guys up. And you know, you can move. I would say on a day where maybe Soto doesn't go, and I think in a 60-game season he'd play 60 times or 58 or 59 times, barring an injury, you know, maybe you move Eaton from right to left, and then you would throw Michael A. Taylor into right field or move Robles over or something like that. I'm not sure. In other words, that there is a backup left fielder. I just think Eaton would be that guy. If something were to happen, and hopefully it doesn't, where Soto misses extended time, you know, Eaton becomes your left fielder. But they can't afford to not have Soto, particularly after losing Rendon. And there's a chance you won't have Zim either. The loss of Rendon's going to be massive offensively. There's no denying that. I think it's really going to cripple their chances to be what they were last year in the middle of their order. And I fear for Juan Soto a little bit, you know, who's never really struggled, who's never really gone through any kind of extended slump. But one of the great benefits for him has been, you know, the star power and the reverence that pitching staffs have for guys like Bryce Harper and Anthony Rendon. And you've constantly had the ability, and it doesn't matter what order you're in terms of protection. People say, well, you know, he was hitting behind him anyway. There is just a difference when you have to, you know, not let a Rendon or a Harper beat you, as an example. Whereas now Soto's kind of a one-man wrecking crew in the middle of this order. If Howie Kendrick can have a year offensively like last year, where he was hitting close to 350 for most of the year, or if you were to have a season like 2017 Ryan Zimmerman, if you remember, after 60 games he had the best batting average in baseball, where he was rolling in that way, Pete, you know, then you can not have to worry about Soto as much. But if this is a situation where what it just looks like on paper, which is Thames, who's a low batting average guy who can hit the occasional home run, or Castro, who's got a ton of swing and miss, or you know, somebody like Zim or Howie is protecting him. Life's about to get a lot harder for Juan Soto, who's all grown up now and who has become the dude. You know, he was kind of the co-star for a couple of years in the lineup. Now it's his show, and he is the sun, and everyone's kind of revolving around him. Makes it a little bit more difficult.
The interesting thing about Juan is, and I think in terms of his development, maturity here, is pitch selection. Does he get over the frustrations early in the season where he's not going to see many strikes in the strike zone? Does he sit for, you know, look, he's Grant, I mean, I can't think early in the season how many fastballs is Juan Soto going to see, in terms of the pitches that he sees? How many of them are going to be fastballs? Where will they be located? If pitchers make a mistake, Juan's got to capitalize on it. If a guy, makes the mistake, throws it fastball right down the middle, he's got to jump on it and take care of his business then. Because I don't believe, early in the season at least, until someone develops, either in front of him or behind him in the lineup, that Juan's going to see many pitches in the strike zone. Teams are going to be willing to not let him beat them and make other people on this roster. Someone else is going to have to step up into those spots in front of him and behind him and produce. And until those things start to come out, I don't think teams are going to throw Juan Soto strikes. He needs to be willing to take his walks, go down to first base, and as we know, Grant, pitchers freak out when somebody's on base. You can distract them by drawing a walk, and you can do a whole lot of damage and help your team set up a lot of damage that way. And Juan's got to be willing to play that role early in the season, at least for now, in my mind, for this team. Take your walks, cause issues that way, and help your ball club, because as we know with this particular pitching staff and certainly the starting rotation as we know it, that group doesn't need a whole lot of runs to work with. But, boy, you stake them to a lead early in the game, even if it's 1-0, 2-0, you put your pitchers, and those pitchers in particular, in a great situation right away here at the start of a ball game.
Yeah, helping make Juan Soto get to the level he's been the last couple of years might be one of our concerns. Do we have any others about this team? We can get into that next. Also, something that needs to get done sooner than later that is starting to become a frustration of mine, and we can talk about that next as well. 15 or so minutes left with Pete. I'm Grant. We are getting you ready for Danny and Cakes at the top of the hour right here on The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
He's Pete, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan, Danny Ruye, Johnny Cakes, Allville with you at noon and 10 minutes for 3 hours until 3 o'clock as we keep you company live and local on 106.7 The Fan with your weekday broadcasters all weekend long. We were just talking about the Nats, Pete. One thing that they've got to get done, one thing that is frustrating to me, is that as of right now, the guy that built the World Series Championship Club, Mike Rizzo, who, you know, I've argued with people over the last few years about Rizzo and how good he is and his competence on the phones and otherwise. But I think most people in and around baseball kind of get it. You see what this organization's been since he took over. Really since 2012 when they became a division champion. And more often than not since, they're the best team in the East. And in every single year, they are competitive. And if they don't make the playoffs, it's a major disappointment. They have been one of the better regular season clubs in the sport. And the hole in his resume and the incorrect silly goose thing that people would say is, yeah, but they haven't won the championship, though. Yeah, but he doesn't have a World Series, though. Well, now he does. He's not going anywhere, I can't imagine. He bought a place, and he just got married, and he lives right near the ballpark, and he can walk to and from Nats Park. But it is fairly crazy to me that it took until opening day a couple years ago for him to get an extension going into his final lame duck season. And now here we are, sitting here on June 28th, after this pandemic and with everything that happened between the owners and the players and spring training about to start again, and he still doesn't have another deal. We do this dance, it seems like, with Rizzo every couple of years. He's very good at what he does. I don't understand why it seems like it takes so long to sort this out every single time rather than just once getting ahead of it. I don't know, like maybe right after he won the World Series and locking him up for 4, 3, 5 years or something like that. But it just doesn't seem to be the way that things go around here.
Well, I mean, obviously, and I'm obviously Mike, you know, deals with the learners on a daily basis. So I'm sure there have been conversations, you know, privately behind the scenes. I think right now, I mean, like most major league owners, They are only doing the business that is a pressing need right now. I would think if we were under regular circumstances and we were in the middle of a season right now, I think perhaps, you know, the business part of this deal would be done. I don't think there's any question, you know, Mike has more than earned the extension here. I think it's just a matter of when, you know, the ownership and Mike sit down and actually put their name on a contract. Because if you let this guy go, these guys, Grant, are few and far between in baseball. I mean, we see people, you know, change that front office, you know, every 4 or 5 years for a reason. And those franchises spin their wheels. Since Mike has been here, this club has at least gone into almost every season now as a legitimate contender, which sells tickets, which brings people to the ballpark, which sells the merchandise, puts people, you know, in support of the club at all levels. And that's all you can ask that person in that position to do. Mike has answered the bell. He's checked off all the boxes. He's won a world championship. And he did it, Grant, under the most adverse circumstances maybe of any general manager recently, based on the fact that his team was 19-31 and had a ton of problems, and he went out and he fixed it, got it fixed, and his team rallied and won the world championship. So I'm not sure what more Mike could do in that position to earn an extension with the ball club.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, I have to imagine. I think fans would be outraged if it didn't at this point. But it's just the effort that seems to go into this and the amount of time it takes is what I don't really get. What do you got planned this afternoon for the end of your weekend here on this Sunday?
Since I've been busy all weekend, today my daughter gets her father all afternoon. So that's basically all we have planned here. Probably going to go up to the school, do some hitting, maybe even break out her field hockey stick, since field hockey is not too far off in the distance there, potentially in August and September if there is it. So give her a chance to get the stick out and start to hit the ball around again, because that's what I do as a dad. Give my kids
like
all
it.
The opportunity.
Attaboy. Pete Medhurst, boys and girls, will be back at it, I'm sure, very soon. Although next weekend, I think you and I are probably idle on Sunday, as it's 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing
something
a little bit different.
I'll be in Ocean City next Sunday, so.
Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your trip. Vic, thanks for your hard work behind the scenes. If you are locked into the Fan over the next 3 hours, you will be hearing from Danny Ruye and Johnny Cakes Allville. For Pete, I'm Grant, saying so long. Thanks for listening to 106.7.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.